I want to thank everybody who participated in this morning's service, and a special thanks to our guest musicians, Jim Brackett, Kevin Page, both related to Victor and Laverta Page, members of our church here, and also a special thanks to Josh or Joshua Guzman, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Josh, who is our guest organist this morning. Josh plays on a regular basis at a number of churches in the Los Angeles area, and we're glad that he is here this morning to also accompany or play for us here on our organ. Josh is a student of organ music, and if he's not studying, he's an almost full-time church organist at different churches. So thank you to all our musicians. It adds to the beauty of our service. Now to our guest speaker. You've seen the name of the bulletin. You've seen the picture. You've seen him at different times and places, at union constituency meetings and so on. Elder Gordon Botting wears more than one cap. He is the stewardship secretary for the Pacific Union Conference, but he lives and also works up in the Northern California Conference, where he is the health director and community services director. So kind of two different areas that he's ministering in, but he's well qualified in all of these areas. And this morning and today, he is here at Yucaipa to share with us how we can live as free people from the bondage of debt, amongst other things. Elder Botting, we want to welcome you. He's from New Zealand, and we should be arch rivals because I'm a Springbok fan and you are an All Black fan, I know that. But we will leave rugby out of the picture now here in church. Welcome to the pulpit of Yucaipa. Welcome to this day in the seminar that you'll do this afternoon. God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you, Pastor Hine. Good morning, saints here in Yucaipa. This is a good morning, isn't it? What a wonderful service we've had so far. I often think when we hear trumpets played and organs played and think about that first Sabbath on the Sea of Glass. Have you ever thought about that? A million pianos playing, and then a million trumpets, and a million organs, and then probably 3 or 4 billion people in the choir. What a day, what a musical day that'll be. Have you ever thought about that? I hope that we'll all be there so we can enjoy that program, and Jesus will be the speaker at the sermon that day. I'm also proud this morning of the beautiful flower arrangement for a community service person. As the community service director in Northern, we're always excited about what's happening in community services. And I'm particularly thrilled that we're now moving faster into the 21st century with community services as we're getting a chain of thrift stores. And this year, I know in Northern, we've got 40 community gardens and 40 different Adventist churches. So we want to move community services in a completely different area than we've always thought of it. And perhaps more excitingly, the youngest community service leader we have is 26. And it used to be always relegated to those that are retired. Now we're seeing it become truly what it should be. Community services for all different aspects of the church. And I'm glad for that. Today, our sermon is a more practical one. The pastor asked me if I would come and do some financial education, and so our sermon will be very practical today. I don't know about you, but even though it is a serious topic, I'm starting to feel very humorous about the words that are being used, particularly in the last 6 months. Have you noticed that? First of all, they tell us that we're going to be rolling and falling over a financial cliff. And then the next thing, they want us to do some aerobics and hit our head on a debt ceiling, right? And I think the latest word, sequester, as far as I understand, it means you're sitting down. So now the politicians want us to sit down on our debt. But it seems like Everybody talks about debt, but we really don't get serious about it. Wouldn't it be fun if your senator said in his next run for the Senate, "I'm the saving senator," right? Wouldn't that be good? Or maybe the congressperson said, "I'm the creditor-free congressperson." But politics aside, I really believe, folks, that we are living in an interesting time when most families are faced with some sort of economic crisis. Whether it's a foreclosure on their house, one member of the family is out of work, whether their credit cards are piling up and they just don't seem to know how to make it balance. So this morning I thought we would look at what God's Word has to say about debt. Most people don't realize that actually one out of every six texts in the Bible has either a principle or a text about money and possessions. Which really tells me that we actually worship a very practical God. He realized where we lived. And though the Bible's primary concern is about salvation, your salvation, my salvation, it also gives us a lot of principles about different aspects of our lives. And so this morning, we're going to look at debt for a moment. I want to give you, first of all, just very quickly, I'm going to come down here so I can see too, seven reasons why we are in debt in this country. Probably the basic and most important reason is consumer debt. That means we are buying as much stuff as we can. And unfortunately, we're leaving it on our credit cards, our debt cards, etc. And so consumer debt is one of the number one reason that we're, as individuals, over $1 trillion in debt in this country. Ease of credit. I don't know about you, but some of you are older may remember back when you really had to have a good deposit to buy a house or a piece of property. I remember 40 years ago or so when I began my working career, I remember saving $2,500 to put a deposit on a 5,000 piece of land. And when I went to the bank and asked them, could I just borrow the other 50%? The bank manager laughed me out of his office. He said, "You don't have enough to put down." That's incredible when you think about it today. Adult toys. I laugh when I think about this. My neighbor has a trailer, or my former neighbor had a trailer, and the grass was growing around it, but he had a canvas over the top of the trailer. And I could never figure out what he had until one day I noticed what it was. It was a snowmobile. He had kept two snowmobiles until the grass grew around them. He's a long way from snow where I live, and he just had one of those adult toys. And today you find a lot of people in their homes, in their backyards. They've got, you know, speedboats, they've got RVs, they've got all sorts of things. And now they're realizing they wish they could get rid of them so they could perhaps pay off their debt and do other things. Eating out. Interesting, in France, they say the wife works to pay for the privilege of them eating out every night. So there's a really big push, as it were, in society to at least have some meals out every day. Surprising, even in this country, there are people who don't even know they have a kitchen because they eat three meals a day out. Unexpected bills. I would say that you're probably very much aware that bills just suddenly crop up. Suddenly that property tax bill comes up, or that tax bill at this time of the year suddenly looms in front of you. And so there are many reasons. reduction in income. Suddenly one person loses a job, or for some other reason, your income is reduced. Lack of a household budget, probably one of the major reasons that people in this country just do not have as much money as they would like. But I want to look this morning primarily at the biblical principle of debt. And so I want to just look at some texts and some other items. Interesting, of the 3,200 texts that are specifically on money in the scriptures, 26 of them deal with debt. You've probably never sat down and done a Bible study on debt. Yes, on the second coming, or on second advent, or the love of God, or whatever it is, but you've never done a specific study on debt. But there are 26 texts that specifically talk about debt. Interestingly, none of them say it is a sin to be in debt, but all of them say there will be negative consequences if you go into debt. So here's the first one. If you want to write these down, here are probably about 6 or 7 texts that we're going to look at and what they refer to as far as debt. The first one here, of course, is debt is a form of bondage. And we go to the wisest man that ever lived, King Solomon, and he talks about the fact that in the Proverbs, and I think it's chapter 22, verse 7, the borrower is servant to the lender. Now, I don't know about you, but most of us sort of skim over texts. And we just say, yeah, that's a very interesting text. Yes, that probably applies to somebody back then or somebody down the road. But we never think of it in our own sort of situation. I wonder how many of us have ever really put ourselves into biblical texts. And here's one you can. Let's say you owe money on your house. And I don't owe any money on my house, but let's say I did. I would, instead of saying the borrower, I would say the borrower, Gordon, is a slave to, and whatever mortgage company, let's say the ABC mortgage company. Suddenly it makes more sense to you, and you begin to understand why these texts were put in the Bible, to help us think about our own consequences when it comes to debt. I've often thought, I wonder how many people would put on the back of their credit card this text. So every time they go into Macy's or Nordstrom or whatever, Fifth Avenue or whatever, and they're about to hand over their credit card to buy something that they may not really need, they would be reminded by a text in the Bible that says, you may be coming now a slave to this retail store. All right, let's look at number 2. Debt, a lack of contentment. I love the passage that Paul has in Philippians 4. Remember, he says, I have been in situations where I've been at the church's fellowship lunch and we've really had a spread. And then I've been in other situations where I've been out at sea in a shipwreck and I haven't had food for many days. But in every circumstances, I am content because I know that God is with me. Are you content with your finances this morning, folks? That's the question I want to ask you. You know, there's a lot of people that are trying to, what, keep up with the Joneses, we say. You know, if they've got a beautiful new vehicle, I've got to have a new vehicle. If they have a new landscaping in front of their house, I've got to do that. Contentment. I love to travel. And one of the things that I get joy is that I like to go on bus tours in other countries. And the first thing I like about the bus tour is I don't have to drive. I do a lot of driving, so it's nice to be able to sit and someone else drive. I also like to know that the first time I step into that bus, that particular vacation is paid for. Now, why did I tell you that? I talk to people and they say something like this: my husband and I are overwhelmed with finances, and we feel like we're just drowning. He works one and a half jobs. I work a full-time job beside being a full-time mother at home. And we just got so tired of this endless work. We decided we'd have a vacation. And so we decided to go on a 10-day cruise. And you ask them, you say, well, how much did that cost? Well, they say maybe a couple of thousand apiece. And then I said, what happened? Oh, when we got back from that cruise, our contentment went further down. We are now in more stress because he's working two jobs and I'm working one and a half jobs. Sometimes we don't realize that contentment is just living below our means instead of above our means. Debt presumes on the future. You know the little book of James, I think Martin Luther called it the straw epistle. But I would like to tell you, I believe it is a financial education epistle. There are lots of things in there that apply to us today if we would just read them in context. This is a passage there. Now listen, you say, today or tomorrow we'll go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. Why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. Probably most businessmen beginning their career and business never read this text, but it's right there in the book of James. And presuming on the future. I had to smile some years ago on this very, very text. My dad was 85, not a very good money manager, I have to admit. And at 85, he decided to buy a senior apartment. And so he goes to the bank and he says to them, I would like to borrow some money. I'll put a deposit down. I'll borrow some money. Unfortunately, or fortunately for him, the bank says, we can't, discredit your age. We got to give you a loan. And we're happy, Mr. Botting, to give you a loan for 30 years. Well, as the son, I was pretty excited. What does that mean? 30-year loan? He's going to live to at least 115, all right? And I like to think about that. Unfortunately, he passed away in his 90s. He did have a good life. But we can't always presume on the future, can we? That's why I encourage people in my financial seminars to make sure you take the shortest loan you possibly can, a 15-year. I know for my wife and I, when we bought our last house, we took a 15-year loan and adding a few extra dollars, we paid it off in less than 7 years. I want to make sure that I do not owe anybody anything. You know, that's what Paul says in Romans. He says, you should love people more than you should owe people in chapter 13 of Romans. So folks, when you buy that vehicle, when you buy that major appliance, or you buy that house, make sure you think about what James says and make a tremendous difference. Avoid get-quick-rich schemes. I have to be really serious with you folks about this. In the top two churches in America that get involved in get-quick schemes, you probably cannot guess who they are. Two churches. Church of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons as we call them, and Seventh-day Adventists are the two churches that get involved more in get-quick schemes than any other. I don't know what that says about our Christianity, folks, because get-rich-quick schemes, as far as I'm concerned, are talking about our greed, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I like to think that we as Adventists are givers. We're committed to generosity rather than we are committed to greed. And yet it seems so often that someone sitting next to you will say, if you can lend me $10,000 in less than 6 months, I can double your amount. This is a serious question. I know pastors and churches that have lost all their money because they've got involved in these get-quick-rich schemes. In fact, the book of James talks about the answer to this. When someone says to you, I think I can double your money, even if you love them dearly, run for your life. And James talks about that, getting your shoes on and getting turbo power and moving as fast as you can. It's usually only one person or two people at the top that make the money. The rest of the people lose it all. So avoid it. Here's another one that so often gets Christians into problems. Being surety for others. I always have to smile at how many times Solomon talks about this in the book of Proverbs. And notice what he says. Oops. He is surety for a stranger will suffer for it, but one who hates being surety is secure. A man devoid of understanding shakes his hands in a pledge and becomes surety for his friends. In one of the translations, not an original, but a translation, I have to smile. It talks about you going to bed one night and lying on your beautiful mattress and in your nice silk sheets, and you have that nice feather pillow, and you're just sleeping. And you have signed for somebody else to buy a car and they failed to make the payments, and suddenly you wake up in the morning and your mattress has been taken away from under you and your sheets are gone and your pillow are gone because the creditors come in and taking it all. It's sort of a vivid picture of what happens to so many people when they become surety or they become the one that takes the loan for someone else. I've always said to people, if you're going to sign for someone else, think of it as a gift. Don't think of it as a loan. If you get the money back, hallelujah. But otherwise, think of it in that direction. This is one. You didn't know that David, you think of David in the Psalms as a musician, but he has quite a bit to say about finances in the Psalms. And here's one of the texts. He talks about, actually in the first part of this text, he talks about how the rich give generously, and then he concludes by saying this, the wicked borrow and do not repay. Now, what has this got to do with your Christian witness? I believe that too often the reason why people do not come to church is because we owe them money. Used to be a saying, and I haven't heard it for probably four decades in church, but there used to be a saying, you can't witness to your banker. There's a lot of truth in that. In fact, let me take it one step further. If you've borrowed from a relative and you're sitting there at Thanksgiving table, guess what happens sometimes, you know? Uncle Bob and Aunt Mary, who you borrowed the money from, are looking across and wondering, you're sitting here enjoying this meal, but how come you have never repaid what you owed us? But let's take it a step further. Let's imagine there's a young couple in this church and the pastor here is about to have a revelation seminar or some type of evangelistic campaign. And the young couple are so excited, they're going to invite all their neighbors. And so they go downstairs where the landlord is and they hand him the beautiful brochure about the revelation of Jesus Christ. And they say, you would love this series. You'd learn so much about Jesus. but they have forgotten to pay their rent for the last 2 months. And guess what happens? The landlord's thinking, I wish your Jesus would tell you to pay up your bills. That's what happens sometimes. So remember, your Christian witness can be affected by your debt. And last but not least, debt imperils one's giving. The text I'm using here, the righteous give generously, the first part of that chapter 37. But if you read down further in that chapter, you know that you can give generously, because what happens in that chapter? Later on it says, I can guarantee you your food and water is sure. I have never seen the righteous begging for bread. What a powerful chapter that is. It's really a chapter that we need to read when we're sometimes feeling financially down. We need to say to ourselves, God is going to take care of me. And I believe that as we look at these different aspects of debt in the Bible, we begin to realize that there's a balanced picture here, isn't there? We can give generously. Let me conclude this morning by telling you just a very short story from my ministry. Some years ago, I was the lead pastor in a church, a large church, and one day a lady came into my office and she said, Pastor, my husband has divorced me and left me three teenagers, and we need about $2,000 to put a deposit on an apartment and get a vehicle, and so I can start working and providing for these teenagers. And I said to this lady, I said, the church is not a bank. We cannot give you money. Folks, if you're on the church board, never lend people money. I was in one church where the gentleman that the church had given money couldn't pay up, and guess what? He never came back to church again. Till later, many years later, he did pay up. And so I said to this lady, I said, Sister, I can't loan you money, but I tell you what, I believe that we can help you. So I said, come into my office, and I said, what are the 7 things that you desperately need? And so I wrote down the 7 things that she needed. And then I said, come back in 48 hours. And she went away, and during that 48 hours, I called up different members in the church to find out exactly how they might be able to help her. And I was excited, because the first person I went to was the community service lady. And her name was Mrs. Candy. I thought that was a great name for a lady that was the community service leader. And I said, I don't want any secondhand clothes. Do you have any cash that we can buy these teenagers new clothes, because the beginning of the new school year was coming up? And she said, yes, Pastor, we have some money, and we'd be happy to buy a couple of sets of clothes for each of these young people. And so in 2 days, the lady came back and sat across from me, and I said to her, I have to tell you this. Your church family has answered every one of your needs. You see, I know something about the Adventist church, having pastored for at least 43 years. I know something, and that is this. We may not be like other churches, demonstrative, charismatic, but I know deep down in the heart of every Seventh-day Adventist Christian, there's kindness and there's generosity. And I was able to tell her, someone said, I've got an extra car. You can have that car. Someone else said, you know, I can help you, or maybe find a job. I don't remember all the details. But what I was able to say is, your church family was able to help you when you needed it most. So I encourage you today, stay out of debt and become generous Christians, because this world is going to need it more, particularly as we see Jesus coming.